What is it that has been so fascinating about the incredible life of J. Robert Oppenheimer? Maybe it is the distances he traveled.
You know, Oppenheimer had that terrible vector in his life where he went from being an unknown, brilliant physics professor to being the most recognizable scientist in history, except for Einstein.
Composer John Adams, his opera Dr. Atomic, about 2 weeks in the life of Oppenheimer, the so-called father of the atomic bomb, has just had its premiere.
And he went from being a savior of the free world to a potential communist spy. So it's an amazing story.
The dynamic physicist, Oppenheimer, with pipe and pork pie hat, was hired by the U.S. government in 1942 to lead the Manhattan Project, the effort to build the atom bomb and use it to end World War II. He was a dazzling scientist, of course, but he had an unexpected artistic bent and an overpowering humanism, a magnetic personality. For their new biography of him, Martin Sherwin and Kai Bird did hundreds of interviews with his former friends and colleagues, many of whom spoke about his gift for human connection.
His sharp, icy blue eyes.
Kai Bird.
When he met someone, he intensely looked into them and drew them to him and listened carefully and empathized with him.
3 years into the Manhattan Project, the bomb was tested successfully. Cheers went up. It had taken a staff of thousands and $2 billion to get to that point. But Oppenheimer's blue-eyed humanism took over after the bomb was used 2 months later in Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
We have made a thing, a most terrible weapon, that has altered abruptly and profoundly the nature of the world. We have made a thing that, by all the standards of the world we grew up in, is an evil thing. Some of you will have seen photographs of the Nagasaki strike, seen the great steel girders of factories twisted and wrecked. Some of you will have seen pictures of the people who were burned or had a look at the wastes of Hiroshima.
The atomic bomb and the years that followed its creation defined J. Robert Oppenheimer. Both his victory in its completion and his defeat in the attempt to alert the world to its dangers have come to define the bomb for us in a way. We and subsequent generations have tried to untangle and comprehend his story. We've found the man everyone called Oppie in many places.
This is an exact solution.
A young Sam Waterston played him in an early 80s BBC series called Oppenheimer that also came to public television here in the U.S.
The amount of energy released in a fission, if you have enough fissionable material and the chain reaction isn't controlled.
Peter Prince was hired to write it.
You've got a bomb.
A big bomb.
It is the biggest story ever. You can't turn it down. So I got more and more into it and had more and more feelings about Oppenheimer.
Prince and company dug into the transcripts of the hearings held in the 1950s.
When did your moral qualms become so strong?
In which Oppenheimer, who'd been outspoken in his deep reservations about the use of nuclear weapons, was accused of being a communist spy.
What did moral qualms have to do with that?
And had his security clearance revoked.
What did moral qualms have to do with that?
Yes, sir.
Like many of these things in that period of McCarthyism and Cold War anxiety, it was less accurate than it was symbolic.
It was a risk to their policies.
Author Martin Sherwin.
Some of them convinced themselves that he was literally a security risk, but that was a rationalization as a way of getting rid of this formidable intellect and charismatic speaker who could argue against their case for nuclear weapons.
Sherwin and Bird's detailed biography of the man, American Prometheus, gives us a myth to help us understand the full dimension of the story.
Prometheus stole fire from Zeus and gave it to mankind, and then Zeus,
Kai Bird,
this mythical Greek god, punished Prometheus for having done this by chaining him to a cliff side and having a giant eagle peck out his liver for 15 generations. And this is exactly what happened to Oppenheimer in 1954, really.
For Oppenheimer, who loved America and wanted to serve, it was the ultimate punishment.
But Oppenheimer, I think it was Einstein who said about him that his trouble was that he is in love with the United States government and she doesn't love him back.
Author Lydia Millett. She gives us a fictional treatment of Oppenheimer, bringing him back from the dead in our own era in her book, O Pure and Radiant Heart.
After raising him on high, they cast him out, and so he became a defeated man, sad man, for the final chapter of his life.
And now, the new Adams opera, Dr. Atomic. Opera may be an ideal form for a saga of such sweep. It's a Faust story, a soul sold in a way, a bargain struck. All the power and resources and personnel he could use in exchange for a bomb.
Americans love a story where somebody goes high and then crashes.
For John Adams, too, the Oppenheimer story is a kind of American myth.
And what a myth is something that is not tied down to a timeline, something that's timeless and exists as a complex of emotions and images and ideas.
So the grandeur of myth and legend and opera are appropriate to tell Oppie's story, unless you take the other view.
It was a people's story.
Peter Prince.
That was the special flavor we tried to give it. And as far as Oppenheimer's life, which was, like most people, somewhat messy at the edges, that had to be there. And that's why it shouldn't have been some sort of myth with Greek choruses and so on.
After World War II, a different kind of war was fought over J. Robert Oppenheimer. And it was more than a culture war.
It was a political war about how nuclear weapons would be used in American foreign and military policy. And Oppenheimer's view lost 100%.
It would seem to me almost inevitable that in a world committed to atomic armament, the shadow of fear, secrecy, constraint, and guilt would hang heavy over much of nuclear physics, much of science.
In any way, this story of conscience and consequences is offered, mythically, fictionally, with chorus and orchestra or kitchen sink realism, it's worth taking in for whatever it may tell us. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.